Welcome to Struggling Blessed But Not Alone podcast. This is a faith-based podcast where your host, Teresa, will share her life struggles with you, as well as interview others on their life struggles to show you no matter what is going on, God will get you through it. No storm is too big or too small for Him. Please sit back, relax, grab your favorite cup of joe or beverage. Enjoy today's episode. Here is your host, Teresa.
Okay, guys, it is another week. I don't know where you are in your week, but today is Friday for me. Yep, we get to put it up on Friday. So, and I am recording this on Friday morning because I've had a really interesting week. So it took me a little bit longer to do, but I will have it out by this afternoon. So by the time you hear this, I don't know what part of the day you'll be in, but I'm just so glad to be here with you. And guess what? Guess what? Guess what? If you are wondering who that announcer guy is that I have, today's the day to be excited because he is sitting down with me. That gentleman is Blazing Blake. Yep, he's a radio announcer. He's my dear friend. He's written a book. He's so much more. He's such a positive, inspirational, God-fearing man. He's just an amazing man that sits down with me and shares a little bit of his life and about a book that he's written called Blind for a Purpose. So why not sit back, relax, get ready, share this episode with your friend, hit the like button, and just get ready to enjoy all about Blazing Blake, my announcer friend. Okay, guys, here we go.
Hi, this is Blake Lindsay, author of Blind for a Purpose, Turning Life Challenges into Purpose in Life. I originally wrote this book to specifically inspire people with unique challenges to work hard, to have a good attitude, and not allow that challenge to get in the way. Our Heavenly Father will always help us to be successful if we live by His principles the best we can. I'm so excited that Teresa Gafanti has invited me on Struggling Blessed But Not Alone. We are going to have a good time talking about the book and what it's like to be able to encourage people in a very special way. To be blind or to have a special unique challenge can inspire people more than we can possibly imagine. If we do it right, people are going to work harder and eliminate excuses. If you go to Amazon, the book is $16.95. And if you go to BlakeLindsay.com, that's L-I-N-D-S-A-Y, I want you to have the book for just $12. If you mention Struggling Blessed But Not Alone, I encourage you to have an excellent day and I'll be talking to you soon with Teresa Gafanti on Struggling Blessed But Not Alone.
Okay, guys, we are back from that break. And, you know, I always got to get that sponsorship done so we can get paid. And I am here with my friend Blazing Blake, and he will tell you all about that at some point, why he's named Blazing Blake. But hi, Blake, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Teresa.
So Blake, why don't you, because I'm not good at it and I just announced you, but why don't you do give a little bit of your bio and some stuff about you?
Well, I'm the second out of five kids. Mom and dad had five kids, and I got three brothers and a sister. I'm a Christian man, 18 years of marriage.
Amen.
And I got a really good soulmate, and she can see very well a lot of the things that I'm trying to get into and out of and that kind of thing. So, you know, we have good communication. And I tell you what, it's been a very good life, and I just really am grateful.
So can you tell me some of the careers you've had?
Well, I was a banker for 7 years. That was kind of fun because I've always been pretty good at math, excluding algebra and geometry. But
and you were a banker. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, I got to do that for 7 years. I also worked for the Zig Ziglar Corporation, and he's a positive life person who I really was inspired by a lot. He wrote 30 books and passed away about 7 years ago. But what a wonderful legacy Zig had. And then I worked in the broadcast business for 22 years. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of fun, I tell you what. And it still is a lot of the people that I met through broadcasting, I still keep in touch with.
Okay, guys, before he goes on, hold on. Since you said that, if you haven't recognized, this is my announcer guy who announces me every week. Yep, this is the guy. I boasted about him last week on the episode, and now you get to hear him. And I know you guys, some of you have texted me, called me, asked me questions about him. So this is who I'm interviewing, the guy that says welcome to my show and then exits you out. All right, Blake, keep going. So you're a radio announcer. What else have you done, sir?
Well, I've written a book. I have, I love to write. I like music a lot. So I play the piano. enjoy doing that. I used to play clarinet and saxophone, not so much anymore, but would love to pick up those instruments again at some point. That was a lot of fun back in the band days. But I just enjoy a lot of music and taking walks. I like to pretty much just live my life to the fullest every day.
So you exercise as well, yes.
I do, yes.
Okay, guys. So now, Blake, I'm going to ask you a question because they probably didn't catch on, and I really haven't, don't think I've shared at this point with my listeners what some of your struggle is, but isn't your struggle in life. And I don't think they caught when you talked about your wife, because you said some key word there. Tell me what happened when, after you were born 9 months later, to tell your struggle and then to tell your blessing and your not alone story. Go ahead.
Well, Teresa, when I was 9 months old, mom and dad started noticing that my eyes looked very discolored and unhealthy, and they were concerned. And even more than that, my lack of alertness during feeding time, because I got an appetite even back in the day. And so they started taking me to eye doctors and specialists. And finally, the determination was made that I had retinoblastoma. Kind of sounds like dynamite, doesn't it? But it was cancer that they needed to remove right away to save my life. And so mom and dad were really in a whirlwind at that point. They were 25 and 6 years of age, and they had never encountered anything like that before. I already had a brother who was 15 months old, and he had all of his senses and didn't have this difficulty. So mom and dad did the right thing. They prayed often and got me taken care of. They removed my retinas, got rid of all the cancer, and saved my life, but it completely took my sight to be able to do that.
So what was going on? Like, how did your mom recognize, she just recognized that your eyes weren't going the way they should? How did she really recognize to take you to the doctor and realize that something was wrong?
There was a lack of alertness, especially during feeding times, that she would notice, and I wasn't making as much eye contact, and my eyes looked pretty unhealthy. And so she knew that something was wrong, and dad agreed with her that, and they didn't know what it was. And so they took me just to the regular doctor, the family doctor, and he thought it was any combination of things. He said it could be strabismus, it could be detached retina, don't know what's going on, but y'all need to take the next steps. And so they continued about three or four different occasions going to different doctors. And then they finally went to Riley Hospital, Indianapolis, is where I was at the time, and discovered that I had that cancer called retinoblastoma, which was very unique. And so they had to act very quickly. And so mom and dad really went through a lot during that time, and it really strengthened them as Christian people and believers, and just really answered prayer and trying to act quickly. So I really look at mom and dad during those times, and they were both each willing to give one of their eyes to save my sight. I found that later in life, and that really has always touched my heart that they were willing to do that. And that was not going to be a possibility, but they certainly wanted it to be. And so they were willing to each give, one of their eyes equally so that I could have both of my eyes.
Wow.
And I think that's amazing.
That is amazing. Because I think in your book, you said she didn't tell you till you were much older. Like
I was 17 years old. And it was really a good time for me to learn that. So it was for me to really be able to be thankful, full of gratitude for that moment in their life when they had some decisions to make, and that it was the contribution that they were willing to make, sacrifice, contribution, whatever you want to call it. It was a positive thing that they were inspired to do.
So let's go back, because, I know you're talking about the beginning, and then you jumped to that she told you at 17, but because this book is, okay, guys, let me share this with you first before, because we're going to go all over the map with Blake, because he's got so much exciting things in his life, but let's take it. Let me tell you about me getting my hands on his book. So this book is fascinating. Can you just tell us, because one of the reasons while you're telling your story, because I think at this point it is important, because what you've told me, and I'll just tell you what you told me and then you can elaborate on it. You told me when I got your book that you really wrote it for parents to know, like, how to help them in raising their children, or just to be aware of different things. So while you're telling this story, I wanted to bring that into play so that people really get, because you haven't written the book yet. We're just at age, before age 17. So it's amazing all the stories you share. And that's what I really believe. Like when I read the book and I hear people who are you know, parents who are having problems with their children or any problem. It's just not for someone who's has a blind children, just anyone who's looking for just some hope and helping their, their journey, and watching how your dad and mom just orchestrated this amazing life for a kid. Cause were you the first child? Were you the second child? What, where were you in the scheme of things of children?
I was the second. I had a 15 month older brother.
Okay.
And Brad had all of his senses, you know, and he's even got common sense today. I'm proud of
it. You're cute. So after you did say there was more children. So your parents, even though this happened to you, it didn't frighten them. They really took their faith and belief in saying, we're going to have more children. Cause you do say you have so many brothers and sisters. So they did take that.
Yeah, and even more amazingly, Teresa, they actually had twins that were born premature, and just 3 months premature, and they lost them both, and they were still eager to have more kids, even after I went blind because of cancer. Mm-hmm. And then after the twins didn't make it, one of them was actually born for several hours and named Abigail.
But aww, anyway, what a pretty name.
Even after that experience, mom still wanted to have kids. And so they did. They had three more. In fact, my sister Molly, and then Bryce was born. He's 10 years younger than I am. And I've got a little brother who's about 13 and a half years younger, which enabled me to learn how to change diapers. And that's a skill that everybody's got to have at some point, maybe. And you know,
I don't know about that. I had two sisters much younger as well. I don't have any children myself, Blake, but I had sisters at a young age. So I was changing diapers as well, but I would never change it for the world. I love my sisters, and I'm glad that I could kind of be a mother hen to them. Okay, Blake. So, cause you have great stories about your sister, Molly. And I know there's a story about your brother, and then all this fascinating stuff. So I'll pull out some things that I've read in the book, and then we'll take, different things, but so let's talk about, where was your education? Because, okay, so now your parents have this blind child, this child who can't see, who's been through cancer. How do they start, so you had an older sibling. So where did you go to regular school? Did you go to a special school? What was that like?
Well, mom and dad did me a favor because they lived pretty far from the Indiana School for the Blind at that time. And dad decided it would be a good idea for me to learn all of my communication skills with people who are very educated on teaching people who are blind, whether it's Braille or to be independent and, not to crutch on the fact that you're blind, getting in the way of your success. And schools for the blind are very good about that because they want their kiddos to go to college or whatever is going to make you successful. They're really rooting for you, and they don't enable you to do anything other than to try hard and to give it your best. Through Braille and different things. And so they let me go to the school for the blind. And in my junior and senior year in high school, I transitioned to public school because I knew that I would be entering the world of work and wanted it to be a normal platform for me. And I wanted to be able to inspire kids of all ages and stages, that being blind is not a bad thing at all. In fact, it can be very encouraging. So that was a real good opportunity for me to inspire a lot of kids who were my age and have a good time my junior and senior year in high school. And I would say that really keyed me in on going to work in the sighted world and knowing what to expect. And so I taught a lot of kids in public school how to read and write Braille. That was really fun.
Yeah, I read that in your book as well. Okay, so let me take you back a little bit before we go to current and with the Braille stuff. So, or let me just ask you this, because I know as a disabled child growing up at 11, I do now regret that I didn't, but God has a different path and it's just not the path I was supposed to. I didn't really want to be out of the classroom with other, we'll say normal, but as I say, nothing's really normal except for the setting on the dryer, because everyone's dealing with some type of disability, or if it's not disability, I call it disability. Just don't, like I tell people all the time, just don't call me late for dinner and we're good. But mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with labels. It doesn't make me who I am. Just all the one thing, the only label that I like to have, Blake, is that I'm a child of the Most High God. But let's get back to what I was asking you is, tell the audience or my listeners, for anyone who has a child who's, the pluses, because you were blind, because it was the place to go. Because I do have other friends or other people I know that they their parents didn't put them in a blind school. Because in your book, you discuss a lot of fun things that I was like, when I was reading it, and I read it twice, I had a speed read it last night because I knew that we were going to interview. But I just, I loved it again because I was like, wow, he went to the zoo and then he talked to a tall man and like just all the fun things you did that I was left out of doing things because I was the only child who was losing sight in those classrooms. Yes, there were other disabilities, but I wasn't getting the greatest education. So talk about the empowerment, if you don't mind, of a person going, you know, like getting that education.
Well, I think a lot of parents don't want to send their kids to the blind school because it's so far away. And so when I meet parents here from the, say, the Dallas-Fort Worth area or San Antonio or somewhere far away from Austin, they're like, oh, I don't want to lose my baby. And they're only going to be coming home, you know, on weekends or maybe not even that often if the distance is too great. And so a lot of parents are very hesitant. I talked to a lady the other day. And her son is going blind. He's only in his 20s. And so she's concerned about, and I told her all about a place in Austin that's very, very good, you know, for rehabilitating and being able to bring people's independence back. And I was really boasting about this place. And then she said, well, Blake, man, that's a long way away from here. You know, I don't want to lose my baby like that. And so that's why a lot of people don't go to schools for the blind. And I understand that completely, but it's good, sound education for the first 6 or 8 years of a person's education as they're blind because they learn to be independent. And if you go straight to public school, sometimes they feel sorry for you. And so they give you some passes. And that's understandable that the teachers would do that because they don't know how to handle somebody who they've never dealt with before as far as their visual impairment or whatever the case may be. But I went to the school for the blind, so I was already ready to show the teachers what I could do. And not to focus on what I couldn't do. And that really helped them to understand, hey, this guy is pretty normal. We just need to have, you know, Blake's stuff put in Braille. So we dealt with the printing house for the blind and I Brailled a lot of stuff myself. We brought in somebody to be able to read things to me. So there were different modifications that they made, but they were just slight and they were doable.
Right, because you got that foundation of an education by, you know, because you don't, you know, I get the parent doesn't want to send their kid away. Like I didn't want to go because I didn't want to be different. I was scared to be away from my parents too. There was a whole bunch of things, but I get it. I think that you get a greater education as a younger child because you really get the skill sets that you need, how to use a cane, how to read Braille. You're not stuck in a classroom where everyone's looking at a chalkboard. I do know they'll give you special assistance and different people to help you, but you're inundated with friends that are just like you. So you don't have so many differences. Not that the differences could be bad, but I think everyone's got a different circumstance, but I think that, and you tell me what you think, but I think you just came out, I don't want to say came out, but you were just better educated because you were dealing with the skill sets that you needed. So I encourage people to send, as much as it's hard to do, that's doing the better thing for your child.
These teachers really do the right thing at the schools for the blind. They just want you to be as independent and live your life to the fullest as possible. And so they start you from kindergarten up with a mentality that you are not, you're not handicapped. You know, they don't ever use that term. They say you're handicapable and you're able to really inspire other people to overcome a lot of obstacles because they see this person who's blind doing it later in life. They're like, wow, if a blind guy can do it, I know I can. And so it really works out well. Whereas if you go to public school, they don't have that understanding and they're going to give you some passes. And it's understandable that they would, and I certainly don't blame them in the least for that.
But it hurts the child in the end. Okay, so but let's talk about your amazing mom and dad. But because you know, every time now when you go home to your parents' house, I'll say, give your dad a hug for me because I'm just so excited to you know, because he just, when you read that book, it just, how they just, like, let's tell about your, okay, so you still never told me the story, and that's okay. Just really quickly, when you're a kid, how, because you're just going to all these field trips, and one of them was that you went to the circus. And what happened when you were at the circus? What did you tell that man?
I met this guy. I was 7 years old at the time, and he was 6'3", but he weighed 700 pounds. And he was a circus guy and just a big, jolly man. And he probably was, I don't know, 35 years old and just a big booming laugh. And I said, I'm going to be as big as you someday. I weighed 70 pounds. I weighed one-tenth of what he did. But I thought it was the coolest thing that this guy weighed 700 pounds and he let me feel his big leg. And it was just great. I always wanted to be a big guy, but I only ended up, I was 5'10 and 170 at my, my peak in, as an adult. So well, I didn't quite make it to 700 pounds.
Well, okay. I don't know. I don't really know that that's safe either. So we might be better off. And I don't think you have enough money. Poor Jennifer will be cooking all day and not going anywhere else.
I always wonder how long he lived. He sure was a jolly guy. Yeah. And that probably made him live longer, the fact that he had a positive attitude. But people like that generally don't live to be 90 years old.
So in your book also, you tell stories about how like you got a your dad, when I guess these were times when you were home, how you got a tandem bike. And that would sound like the norm, that I'm, my child's blind, my child's disabled, my child can't ride a regular bike. But tell us what your dad did. Like, what did your dad do after you, like, you tell us this a little bit about, just a little bit, but enough about the tandem bike, and then how it grew to something where your dad just felt that you were capable.
Well, my ninth birthday, they surprised me with a tandem, and it was really cool because these people had bought a tandem, but they really were not going to ride it as much as they thought. It was an older couple. So we went over and we found out about this nice big tandem, and I learned about them, and then 17 miles is all it had on the odometer. So we bought it, and Dad and I rode, and we took a lot of father and son rides together every night. We'd try to ride 6 miles, and just had a lot of good fun on that. But one
day,
you
cheated sometimes, didn't you?
What's that?
You cheated with your dad. Sometimes you made him pedal and you didn't, right?
Yeah, we would get to going so fast sometimes that I would take my feet off the pedals for a moment. And we really prided ourselves on at least a burst at the end of our ride. We'd see how fast we could go. And it had a speedometer on it. And so we would get up around 28 mile an hour. And that's when I couldn't keep up anymore. And then, you know, at 25, I could go that much, but he'd go up to 28 sometimes. And so I'd take my feet off the pedals for a moment and he would coast. And anyway, it was a lot of fun. And we'd be passing people up on the residential streets where the speed limit was 20, you know, he'd be seeing us just speed past them. But one day I was on my two wheeler in the driveway because I knew how to ride a two wheeler. It's just, I wasn't mobile beyond my driveway and yard with it. And Dad said, hey, let's take a bike ride. So I started to put the kickstand down. And Dad said, nah, stay on your bike. I'm going to bend my chain guard so that when I pedal, you're going to hear me. And then I'll talk to you when I'm coasting. So we'll have constant communication. And I'm going to get in front of you and you're going to ride right behind me. And we're going to just go down some residential streets and we'll be very careful. But it's a good communications exercise and it's a good exercise of trust. And boy, was it ever. And I was very hesitant about it. But I said, okay, Dad, you know, and that's after we already had the tandem, but he wanted to go out of the safe zone. And I consider the tandem certainly the safe zone for me, a safety zone. And so we took that ride and we had a couple of accidents initially, but Dad always encouraged me to get back on that bike and we're going to do even better next time. And before I knew it, we were having the time of our life and he would run over a paper cup and I would literally run over the same piece of litter that he just got through running over. It was the funniest thing. And I always took pride in that. Well, Dad would run over something, then I would run over it. And that's how close we were on the vine. And do you want me to expand on the story a little bit?
Well, yeah, just a little bit more. Cause I know, really, we shouldn't. Well, you know what? No, we're going to say no, because that's why they need to purchase the book. Cause I know there's a lady that waves to you and all that stuff, but no, we're going to stop there. Cause then if we tell everything, then they won't buy the book and we really want them, but I'm smiling and laughing because these stories are so great, guys. This book is just so inspiring. Blake's parents just, they have a no holds bar with this young man, with this fine gentleman. They literally take their son out of the comfort zone and just teach him so many things. But what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break right now. And then we come back. He's going to tell a different story, a faith-based story that's in his book about a diving board. So let's take a break really quick. And we'll be right back. Okay. Okay, guys, we are back from the break. Now, what I want you to talk about is you, in your book, you talk about swimming and how you go to some pool and you get on a diving board. And so I'm going to just lead you there and you tell us about this diving board story and what it, just go ahead.
Okay, Teresa, we took a family vacation to Louisville, Kentucky, and went to this big swimming pool. I was so excited about it in advance. I'd heard that there was going to be a high dive, and I could hardly wait because the summer before I had gone off a almost high dive. It was 8 feet above the water, and I got such a kick out of that that I could hardly wait. And so mom and dad got me to this pool, and I felt the ladder, and I thought, man, this is great, this huge ladder. And each step was about 10 inches apart from each other. So I climbed all the way to the top, and dad followed me up the first time, and walked out to the end of the board and had so much spring on it. And I knew that I was 12 feet above the water. And so I leaped in the air and I felt that tingling, and it was just such a buzz, and it was everything that I knew it would be. And then dad said, all right, you know, come back over here, son. And he showed me where the ladder was to do it again. And so I went through this four or five times, and spectators, it was a full pool, boy. And everybody was watching this blind kid have the time of his life. And they started talking to me saying, wow, I can't believe how brave you are. And all this, I took it as a compliment at first, but then they started kind of steering me a different direction. And especially the parents that said, I wouldn't do that if I were you. That is really a little bit too brave. Do you realize how high you are above everybody when you're leaping off that diving board? I said, yeah, 12 feet. You know, I knew the answer to that. And, but you know, they were very insistent on that I was really being a little bit too bold by doing that. So I'd say the eighth or ninth time is about when it was. I didn't want to do it anymore. And dad noticed that I was starting to be hesitant and reluctant, and he had heard what everybody was telling me. And so I went up the ladder. Dad said, we're going to do it one more time, son. I don't want you to have fear just because people have instilled fear in you the last several minutes. I want you to do this one more time to prove to them that you're not afraid. And so I went up at a snail's pace. I couldn't stand it. I was going up and it was like climbing Mount Everest, I always tell people, because I was not having a good time anymore. The smile had left my face, and I got up there and I just kind of crept out to the end of the board and I just stood there and froze. It was 92 degrees outside, but I still froze like a popsicle standing out there on the end of that board. And I said, Dad, I don't want to do that. And he said, come on, son, take your turn. So I did. I took a U-turn. I literally turned around and did a 180 and started walking. And Dad said, oh, no, don't do that. You know, and the lifeguard was already alerted. Nope, we don't allow that. You can't climb down because people could slip down the ladder and fall on the ground and go to splat. And so anyway, Dad was very insistent. He said, you know, son, God has not given you the spirit of fear. And he quoted a Bible verse and everybody's probably like, wow, you know. And so I got out there to the end of the board, and I went ahead and went off of it, and it wasn't bad at all. And then I went off a couple of more times after that for reinforcement, and Dad was pleased that I was back in stride on having a good time, and I had allowed people to instill fear into my heart, and I really let it stop me, even though I had already done it nearly a dozen times, you know, before that fear took over. But finally, people's negative peer pressure, if you will, really made an impression on me that maybe I was doing the wrong thing and this wasn't as much fun as I should be having. So it was a very interesting turnabout, and that story has really inspired me. I was about 8 years old at the time, and there's been several things that have come up in my life since then, and I just don't allow that fear to get into my heart. And we got to be reasonable with expectations, set the right kind of goals, but it just cannot be filled with fear just because people instill it in you, and you can't let that take over.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, for me, and I know you already know this, Blake, because I shared this with you after I read the book, because when I grabbed your book, I just couldn't put it down. I was just so enamored with your dad and your mom just instilling such, you know, can-do attitude. You could do anything. So when I got to that point, tears just started kind of rolling down my face, not tears of sadness, but tears of joy. And as I tell you often, because we've been in many different circles to talk, I always encourage that story to come out, because I think that's such a great story of just, you know, because your dad, let's talk about the physical father, your father, we know that God is really our heavenly father and that he's really there, but your father's even showing you that as your father, you can do anything. And that's what God is showing all of us, not to have the spirit of fear. And I just think that's an amazing story. And it's, it's great you telling us, but it's even greater in the book because it just, it, you do instill a little bit more, and it's okay because they need to go get this book and really, but it's just that whole platform to show how God, you know, don't have the fear, don't have the spirit of fear. And it's just great that your parents did that and your dad didn't. And then also the guy at the pool was like, no, we don't go back. So it's just amazing to hear that story. And for me, it brought tears to my eyes because it's like, yeah, I can't be scared to go through this blindness. I can't be scared. And I already wasn't really scared, but it just reinforced me keep going forward. So I thank you for you don't know this when you're writing this book, but I thank God for getting that book years later and embracing me in a story. So
I'm always going to wonder how it impacted others when they saw my dad insist that I go ahead and go off that board and that dad talked about the spirit of fear and all of that. I always hope that as many people as were around me and watching this father and son thing go on, that people, especially the adults, were inspired by that. I always kind of wonder the impact that that made not only on my life moving forward, but their lives for saying, you know what, maybe we did give this guy the spirit of fear accidentally, and he was having a great time, and his dad was making it a safe environment for him, so we shouldn't have discouraged him. Always right. Kind of wonder about that.
Right. No, and that's why, well, look what you've done to me years later. And then we've already done the interview. Now it hasn't aired yet. It doesn't air till this Friday. So we're going to, you know, push this a little, you know, interview. I do interview, solo interview. But by the time this airs, yours airs, they're already going to hear from Luke. And I know you're still waiting to hear a lot more about Luke Seibert. But, you know, it's just like Luke, he's at a certain age and you know, he's gotten in a car accident and, you know, God shows him not to be fearful, that he can do so many things. And from the age of, and he was, or, you know, he was totally sighted and now he's 19 and in a car accident. And if you haven't watched that, if you listeners have not watched that episode, please go back and watch Luke Seibert, because it's just amazing how this young man also doesn't have fear. And so for me, and as I can say, going back with you, Blake, that story resonates so high and so much that anyone with a child with a disability or anyone having children or anyone struggling needs to get this book. And really, it's a must read. It really is a must read. It's called Blind for a Purpose. Okay, so now what we're going to do is we are going to go to a small break again, and then we're going to come back, because in this break, it's not going to be a break where there's a segment. Blake is going to play his piano for you. So we're not really taking, we're not really going to take a real break, but in order for me to slip in that episode, I have to get me and Blake to stop talking and then come back. So we'll be right back. Okay, guys, wasn't that great? That's one of my favorite songs, and now I get to keep it forever as an instrumental. So tell us a little bit more on what inspired you to record that one.
Well, I love playing the piano. I started when I was 4 years old. Peter, Pumpkin Eater, man, that was my kickoff song. But when I was 8 years old, that song, How Great Thou Art, really How Great God Is, you know, is what that song is all about, and all the awesome things that He's created with the universe and just our lives. And boy, you start thinking about God's awesome wonder. And so How Great Thou Art is a song that I learned how to play when I was about 8 years old. And then when I was about 10, I said, man, I'm going to jazz this thing up. I'm going to make it really pop. And so people really enjoy that a lot. And when I get the opportunity to go speak at churches, I love to play How Great Thou Art. And I usually follow up with, I'm so glad I'm a part of the family of God, and different songs that I like to play. But How Great Thou Art is certainly one of my tip-top favorites, because I really think about the wonderful things that the Lord has orchestrated for us that we need to not take for granted.
I do. I'm going to cherish that forever. Just like, I guess I'm going to have this happen a lot, because I have Luke now. This, but at this point, everyone knows that Luke has sung, and he created a song for, you know, not just for me, but he gave he plays the guitar. So yeah, now I have two instrumentals, or, well, he sings, but I have two songs that are musical talents on my show. Yay. I don't have musical talent, but that's cool. And then what was the other song you say that you play a lot?
Well, there's a song that Bill Gaither came up with. I think his wife wrote it, in fact, but it's called I'm So Glad I'm a Part of the Family of God.
I don't know if I've ever heard that one.
I've been washing the fountain and cleansed by his blood. It's a very inspirational song.
I don't know if I've ever heard that one. Okay, so now that was great, though. I love it. Thank you for sharing and for wanting me to, and letting me put it on my podcast. Okay, so now let's talk about, so your parents instilled a lot. They taught, your parents had a can-do attitude, and I know you for years, so I definitely know that you always are a very much encourager. You're a can-do guy like I am. Nothing stops you. Tell us about, let's go into about your radio life. What made you become a radio announcer? Because I know people want to hear, how did I get you as a radio announcer? And all I had to do was ask, but but what started you on that path?
Well, I loved hearing the radio. When I was a little boy, I could just hardly wait to get a transistor radio, which I got early on. And I was just excited about the energy that I heard on the radio and top 40 music. And when people were funny, and they just really put me in a good mood for the day. If the personality, you know, said something that made me feel good or laugh, you know, that I thought was humorous. And so I thought, I just want to be a radio DJ someday, and I want to be able to do the same thing. And at the School for the Blind, we were actually in relationship with the J. Everett Light Career Center, which was 2 miles away. And they had a radio and TV program, along with a lot of other things that they offered. And so I got in there before I was really supposed to, for juniors and seniors, but I was able to talk them into letting me in as a freshman in high school. And they were just blown away that I could run my own equipment, and just the level of enthusiasm I had for broadcasting. So that was the first time in my life that I knew that I could encourage people who were excited to really not make excuses and to do things the best they possibly could. And that was such a fun thing for me to do in high school. And so I got pretty good at it. Then I went on to a skating rink. I got an opportunity there to have a job, and people would see me queuing my music up and getting it ready to go, and all the preparation. When they found out I was blind, it just like, wow, are you serious? You know? And so it was really a fun time all through high school. I got to do that between the radio station, which got out about 20 miles. It was a high school station that played top 40. And then somebody heard me and said, would you like to work at our skating rink? And so that was another fun thing that I got to do.
You have had many, many careers. So you started as a radio announcer at, I guess you can say, at a roller skating rink. And that probably was fun, because back in our, you're a little bit older than me. But I remember those days of going roller skating. So so what was the big time job that you had? What station did you work at? Because the next thing I want to lead you into, you have a beautiful, beautiful wife, and I want you to tell how you met her.
Well, most of my stations have all been top 40, which, you know, I love Christian music, and I've never had the opportunity to work on a Christian music station. But the biggest radio station that I've ever worked at for 7 years was 106.1 KISS FM in Dallas. And I got to be there from 94 through 2002, right up till 2000, just about 8 years, and got to work with a guy that a lot of people know named Kid Craddock. And Kid and I became very close. He was a very giving person and loved helping people out. He was very generous and made good money, and he shared it with others. And so that was an inspirational time for me. But broadcasting kind of took me from Austin to San Antonio to Dallas, because I always wanted to go to bigger markets. But my main motivator in Dallas was that my mom and dad lived here for a while. And so I thought, wouldn't it be fun to, you know, finally live in the town that mom and dad always wanted me to live near them. And it just, you know, the way my life was going, it never provided that opportunity until about 1991. I moved here to Dallas and worked for, I get to work with a real Wolfman Jack also. A lot of older people remember Wolfman. And he was really a fun person to be around, very honorary in a funny way. So we had a lot of good humorous times together. But my radio broadcasting career then took me to my wonderful wife, Jennifer, who I met in 2000. And I showed up to work one day and my producer, Heather, read me a wonderful letter that I still have today from this young lady who is 22 years old. She mentioned her age at that time. And I thought, I'm 35. I don't know if this is good. But anyway, she just mentioned how much she enjoyed listening to me for the past 6 years and how much I really just made her feel good on a Saturday morning when she was getting ready to go do some retail. She worked at a place called US Toys and Constructive Playthings. And so she would listen to me on the way to work and beforehand and get in a good mood for the day. So she decided to write me a letter and it was just, it was really fun to read that. And so I responded and I said, first of all, I said, my handwriting will probably look a little bit feminine because I'm translating through my friend Heather. So I told Jennifer that I was blind.
Because I'm like thinking, wait a minute, how was your saying that? I'm thinking, how was your, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I mentioned to her that I was blind in the note. And I said, it sure is good to hear from you. Thanks for taking time to write such a nice letter. And I love being on the radio and hearing from people like you. And I said, if you ever get insomnia, I said, I get back kind of late because I was working at Bank of America in customer service. And I chose to do the evening shift because it was busy. They needed the help. But the best part was they paid 10% more money. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to make 10% more than I would on a day shift. So I went ahead and transitioned from days to nights, evenings, I should say. And so I wouldn't get home until about 11 o'clock at night. And I thought, you know, if you ever have insomnia, give me a buzz sometime. And so I gave her my telephone number and she did the smart psychological thing. She waited about a week before she called me. And I heard the phone ringing literally as I was walking into my place, my apartment, and picked up the phone and it was her. And we had such a good conversation. And I could tell that the Lord had sent her my way because of the conversation that we had was very equally yoked. You know, she was a believer herself. And it turned out she only lived 6 miles away. And when you live in a big city like Dallas-Fort Worth, If somebody only lives 6 miles from you, that's a real helpful thing because sometimes people live 30 miles away from you. It's not uncommon at all, you know, to have somebody 30, 40 miles from you that lives in the same general area, so to speak. So we got to know each other on the phone. And then I had my friend Jason finally get us together for our first date. And Jennifer at that time, temporarily did not have her license because she didn't have a need for driver's license. So she wasn't really in a hurry to get it until she met me. And she very quickly got it at that point. But the first introduction we had, my buddy Jason drove me over to her house. Jennifer jumped out and gave me such a big hug and a welcoming hug. And we got to know each other as really good friends for a long time. And we ended up dating for a long time before we actually got engaged. And then we were engaged for nearly 15 months, saving money and setting goals. And then we got married 18 years ago. And it's just been a blessing for both of us. And we don't have any kids, but we have nieces and nephews that we spoil. And I know how to change diapers if they ever need me to. So,
right. We remember you telling that story. Yeah. Well, yeah, I love Jennifer. She's a doll and a half. I've really only spoken to her twice because we just have been so busy in lifestyles and things, but I love Jennifer so much. I think the two of you make a perfect couple. But okay, now we're going to take another commercial break. When we get back, he's going to talk about someone that everyone knows who's passed away, who also has instilled a lot in his life and just made hope and really his parents, you know, gave him, you know, oh gosh, I'm sorry, I'm stepping all over my words or not saying them, but just someone else who's empowered him to just always keep this positive attitude that he has. So we'll be right back.
Hi there, this is Blake Lindsey from Plano, Texas, author of Blind for a Purpose, turning life challenges into purpose in life. God's Word, known as the Bible, has so much hope and encouragement. When I find myself occasionally struggling, I get a whole bunch of inspiration from Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans for a future and a hope. If you find yourself discouraged, think about that.
Do you have a story of a struggle that God has brought you through that you would like to share with the world? If so, Teresa Gufanti is inviting you to be a guest on her Struggling Blessed But Not Alone podcast. If you're interested, please send an email to teresa-blessings@outlook.com to learn more. That's teresa-blessings@outlook.com.
Okay, guys, we are back. And now I want to talk to you about, or I want Blake to talk about Zig Ziglar and how he instilled some stuff in him. Because the one thing is that, you know, what I hope you're getting out of this is no matter what your circumstances are, you know, we do have a great God, that God will empower you, but a positive attitude, you know, raising your children are a gift from God, and a positive attitude really does help you. I know life is hard. I know we take some struggles, but a can-do attitude, and just like I say all the time, flip that frown upside down, help someone else through your day, but smiling and encouraging yourself, or getting, you know, being that encouraging person just does so much more for you. Okay, so can you take us through how you met Zig Ziglar? What inspired you with Zig Ziglar? Whatever you want to share, because this is your time to tell me whatever you'd like.
Well, Teresa, when I was 15 years old, Dad heard some things from Zig Ziglar for the first time. And Zig, my dad thought, you know, there were some things that he could help Zig with on the educational side when he found out that Zig was trying to get into schools and write some wonderful curriculum that would really educate kids to be their best and to have that positive attitude that we all should have every day. And so Dad called Zig and they got to know each other, and Zig wanted to hire Dad to be able to help with this curriculum. And Zig and Dad just really, really hit it off. Zig had been popular at that point for just a couple of years, really. But he had already written the book, See You at the Top. And that was a big, you know, helpful book to a lot of people that he wrote in 1978. And so that book was, it's still popular today. It's a timeless book. And so Dad introduced me to Zig when I was about 17 years old. I was 16 at the time. And I already knew what Zig sounded like and his big booming voice and how encouraging he was with all of his just wonderful testaments and stories, and the way that he would tell them, they just really stick with you. He had the gift that God gave Zig to just be able to tell stories in the way that people would remember him for life and apply them to our lives. And so I got to meet Zig and his son, Tom, who was my age, 5 months younger than I am. Tom will always remind me of that, but we got to meet each other, and I got to know Zig, and I went through a seminar called Born to Win. Born to Win was a one-week seminar, about 5 days, actually, and we actually would get a plaque at the end of it and everything, and so I got to meet a lot of great people who wanted to be encouraged and wanted to be motivated for life, and so we were all born to win that week, and it was a time of camaraderie and just really learning a lot how to really mature our minds and make ourselves capable of having a good attitude most of the time. We're all going to slip up sometimes and not always have a positive attitude, but we can get back on track quickly when we think positive and then really pray often. And it, you know, but every day is not going to be a great day, but most days really are if we allow them to be. So Zig really inspired me so much. And then I continued to listen to his teachings, but I really didn't get to hang out with Zig a whole lot because I was in San Antonio and he was in Dallas. But then later in life, Dad said, hey, you ought to reconnect with Zig Ziglar. So I did. And Zig called me back and he was just so upbeat. And I went ahead and went through Born to Win again. It was a shorter seminar, but I said, Zig, I want to go to work for you. I want to be in sales and I want to develop as a speaker and to be mentored by you a little bit. And so at that time, I was getting ready to write that book, Blind for a Purpose. It was my first book, Out of Sight Living is what I called it. but I was in the process of writing that book. So the timing was perfect to really be encouraged by Zig throughout that process. And then I got to work for Zig Ziglar Corporation, did his podcast for a long time. And we had about 500,000 listeners a month that would download that podcast because they wanted to hear Zig's words. And so I would intro Zig and I would talk for about a minute and then about 8 minutes of Zig. And then I would close out. And so the whole podcast was about 10 minutes long. And we had a blast doing that for the longest time. And I got to know Zig in a very special way as an adult. And it really inspired me still today. A lot of the things that he told me just keeps me going.
So let me ask you now, Blake, because what would you tell someone with all the positivity and all the things you've learned in your life, someone struggling, someone having it hard, someone just getting a disability, someone just thinking that their life isn't worth it or whatever they're going through, what would you tell them today? What would you say for words of encouragement?
Well, you want to pray often and you want to think positive and you want to come to the realization that not every day is a perfect day. And I would say out of 7 days a week, I probably have 5 fantastic days every single week, which is certainly the majority by far. It's usually about 6 out of 7 for me, but you're going to have that one day or that gloomy part. I went through a 3-year period of life where I didn't feel good about things at all, other than I had 2 really, really good jobs. And at the time I was actually with Bank of America and Kiss FM. I hadn't met Jennifer yet, but I went through 3 years of just kind of things were not really going my way spiritually because the lifestyle I was living. And but I knew that God was going to get me out of that. And he sure did. And I thought 3 years, man, the first year that was kind of tough to get through. But it just kind of continued. But God showed me a lot during that period of time. And then once I got out of it, I always like to look back at that time in a positive way, that God saw me through it. All those challenges were overcome. And God is so good. And we're going to go through peaks and valleys in life. But we have to be trusting that things are going to get better, 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 because they will if we allow them to, if we allow God to work with us and open up our heart. But there are going to be those times in life. And I'm glad that I got to go through that, because it's normal for us to go through peaks and valleys. And we just have to remember that God is on our side, that he wants us to be triumphant. And then we should definitely give him the credit where credit is due when God sees us over, because people need to know who to lean on.
Amen. Absolutely. Okay. So Blake, let me ask you this. I totally forgot, but it's still fine. We're good. Where, if someone wants more information to buy your book, to know more about Blazing Blake and all those wonderful things, and just to contact with you, what should they do? How do they reach you?
Well, if you go to blazinblake.com, B-L-A-Z-I-N, blake.com, you can get all my contacts. I want you to email me, because for Teresa's wonderful podcast here, I want to do something special for you today. This book normally goes for $16.95 with Amazon, and that's an easy way to get it. But I want to go $12 with this book.
Oh, thank you. That's sweet of you.
We're certainly, we're struggling, blessed, but not alone. Every one of us, and that's a great name for your podcast. And I want people to realize, especially there's a lot of parents out there who do not enable their kids to get to do all the things that I got to do. And they didn't, some parents are not as inspirational and as, pushing in the right direction. And that's why I wrote the book Blind for a Purpose, because I wanted parents to really believe in their kids and to really realize that they're the primary inspiration with God's help to be able to propel their kids to the next levels of life and to be able to push on. And so Blind for a Purpose will be available for you for just $12. Just go ahead and email me, and that's free shipping. I'm going to make sure that you really get a good deal, because I want you to have the book. And so go to Blake Lindsay, LINDSAY.com, or you can go to blazinblake.com, whichever, and we'll get you that book for
just mention struggling, blessed, but not alone.
Correct.
Cool. Well, that's really sweet of you. Thank you. It's been such a joy to have you on the show. You know, you're dear to my heart, Blake. I can't say enough great things about you. Just, and what we didn't speak about, but that's okay, because it's not about that. I had started a focus group, and Blake is one of the 10 amazing people who are on my focus group. And that is called, not that we're really focusing on that, but oh my gosh, what is it called? Why am I not getting sharing insights? But so we are working on platforms together for people with disabilities and all kinds of stuff. We also work somewhere else. But thank you, Blake, for the time, for the energy, for all that you have done, for being my announcer, for just as the, I thank your parents again, give them a hug. So guys, with that, I'm going to wrap up this episode. I want to leave you with always just know, no matter what you're going through, God is for you, not against you. He will get you through it. He will. I pray that he keeps you, he holds you, that no weapon formed against you will prosper, that all things, you just know that all things work out for his glory and his good, Romans 8:28. And you know what? We don't have Miss Struggles or Grandma Struggles today, but you know, the funny thing is I think I'm ending my podcast, but realistically, guess what? Blake is my announcer. So he says goodbye to all of you at the very end and where to share and like, and all those great things. So Blake, again, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we really say goodbye?
Well, I'm really glad that you have Struggling, Blessed, But Not Alone to inspire us every week. And I just wish you the best in that. And I pray that God will continue to inspire you to have good guests on. And I know that the guests are going to keep coming and everybody's got a different message. And so everybody have a great week. And thank you, Teresa, for having me on today.
Oh, no, thank you. And God, thank you up above, because it is all because of him. But thanks again. All right, guys, have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next week when I do a solo.
Hey, everybody, this is Anne from the Inspirational Journeys podcast. And I'm here today with
Teresa from Struggling, Blessed, But Not Alone podcast. How are you today, Anne?
I'm doing good. How about you, Teresa?
I'm good. So what's up?
I've got some news for you.
Really? What's that?
Did you know that our listeners can support our podcasts?
No. Can you please share more about that?
Okay, so while you're listening to our podcasts on your favorite podcast platform, hit the Support This Podcast button. With your contribution of 99 cents, $4.99, or $9.99 a month, you're helping us achieve our goals.
Wait a minute, Anne. Are you telling me all that our listeners have to do is hit that support button and they could give a donation?
That's right.
Wow. Hey guys, thanks for wanting to do that for us. Have a blessed day.
You have been listening to Struggling, Blessed, But Not Alone with your host, Teresa Gafante. Remember, no matter what struggles you face in life, with God on your side, you are never alone. If you like what you heard on today's episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, share it with your friends, and leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, you can visit teresa-blessings.blog for more inspirational content. Thanks for listening. Have a blessed day.